who got up from the chair and went straight to the office door, so firmly intent that Dan just sat in his desk chair, speechless. But he was thinking, is she one of them? Being my assistant is a good spot for a mole. Is she calling her father? Or one of the guys who killed Hannah and Joe and Pete? April Simmons was cursed with good looks. From the first beauty contest her mother had put her into when she was 5 years old, she had found that she could smile and dimple and everyone would admire her. But as she grew into a shapely teenager and began to understand the power of sex, she started to realize that being beautiful was not enough. Not for her. Yes, the good-looking girls got picked first for the cheerleader squad and teachers excused them for being late with assignments or forgetting their homework. That was fine. But April learned soon enough that others, especially men, didn't expect anything from a beautiful woman except for her to be pretty and compliant. They were frightened by a beautiful woman with brains. April had a first-class brain. At first, she didn't realize this because when she got A's in class, she, and everyone else, assumed it was because she smiled brightly and caused her teachers no trouble. No one was more surprised than April when she sailed through the toughest courses in high school, including algebra and trig, without the slightest difficulty. It was much the same in college. Yes, there was some racial trouble now and then, especially when she dated white men, but she handled it without letting it blow up into a major confrontation. She found that she was actually interested in learning about history and English literature and even the dreary courses in economics. Her only difficulty came when she was pledged for a sorority chapter, and some of the sisters were unhappy with a tall, good-looking, almond-eyed charmer who made them look shabby by comparison. But she won them over, and by the time she was a senior, she was elected president of the chapter. Men were a problem, though. She could manipulate them easily enough. Her high school boyfriends were so driven by testosterone that she could have made them bay at the moon for her, or rob a bank. In college, she began to date older men, including professors from the faculty. She wanted to learn from them. Learn about the big world beyond the campus. Learn about what life had in store for her. Instead, they patted her on the head, or elsewhere, and made it clear that all they expected from her was to be pretty and compliant. When she tried to talk politics or art or anything deeper than the latest Hollywood flick, their eyes went wide with apprehension, and they seldom asked her out again. She got a reputation for being a snob. She graduated with a degree in English literature and an ambition to do something interesting. The first job she took was as an editor on the magazine published by the state's tourism bureau. That lasted less than 6 months. She was asked to leave after showing the editor-in-chief how he was missing some major stories and allowing the magazine to fall into a boring rut. Unemployed, she spotted a news story about a private company in Texas that was building a solar power satellite. Interesting, thought April Simmons. She emailed her resume, with photo, to Astro Manufacturing Corporation and applied for a secretarial job, the only position she felt qualified for. Within 24 hours, she received a return email inviting her to fly down to Matagorda Island for an interview. The personnel chief was a tough-looking older woman with hard, probing eyes and a no-nonsense attitude. But after talking with April for 10 minutes, she smiled and said that the CEO and founder of the company needed an executive assistant. April accepted the offer, determined to do her job well but never to let her boss see how smart she truly was. Then she made her first mistake. She fell in love with her new boss, Dan Randolph. He was one of those rare men who was not intimidated by an attractive woman with brains. In fact, she thought he seemed uninterested in her looks. April got the feeling that he was in love with someone else, someone unobtainable. That made her love him even more. Now she was determined to help Dan find the people who had killed Hannah Arendts, Joe Tenney, and most likely Pete Larson as well. She knew this would be difficult. What she never stopped to consider was that it would also be very dangerous. Austin, Texas. The cocktail reception was held not at the governor's mansion, nor in the Capitol, nor even in one of Austin's major hotels. For this quiet little get-together with his major backers, Morgan Scanwell used the home of the University of Texas's chancellor. As he drove his rented Lexus sedan up the driveway, Dan saw that it was a lovely house, nestled in the deep shade of a garden steeped in vivid beds of azaleas, begonias, and jacarandas. The air was heavy with the sweet scent of jasmine. A pair of kids in t-shirts and jeans were serving as parking valets. Students, Dan guessed. Smart of Scanwell to have the party here. No snoops from the news media. And he gives the university brass the impression that he owes them one. Plenty of security, Dan saw. Blank-faced men in sports jackets and business suits were scattered around the garden and standing at the front door. Dan thought that they probably had enough firepower under those jackets to take out half the student body. There were only a dozen people in the spacious living room, the men in ordinary suits as Dan was, the women in dresses or slacks. Scanwell was nowhere in sight. Neither was Jane. A young woman in a maid's dark outfit proffered a tray of champagne flutes. Caterer, Dan thought, although she might be a student working for the caterer. He thought briefly about asking for a glass of Amontillado, but immediately figured it would be an exercise in frustration and accepted the champagne. Then he saw that several of the men had shot glasses in their hands. Stronger stuff was available. Daniel Randolph? Dan turned at the sound of the man's voice and saw a shortish, solidly built man with a round face fringed by a neatly trimmed dark beard. His skin was about the same shade Dan's would be after a summer in the sun. The man wore a light gray suit with a pastel green tie carefully knotted at the collar of a figured white-on-white shirt. Expensive. Dan thought of Polonius's advice about apparel. Rich, not gaudy. I'm Dan Randolph, he said, smiling politely. I am Asim al-Bashir, the man said, extending his hand. He had to shift his cut crystal old-fashioned glass to his left hand. His fingers felt cold to the touch. Pleased to meet you, said Dan, thinking, he looks Arab, his name sounds Arab, but he's drinking alcohol. Not much of a Muslim, then. I'm on the board of Tricontinental Oil, al-Bashir said. Mr. Garrison wants me to go over the details of our agreement with you. Dan replied, I spent the morning talking to Yamagata's people. They want to buy into Astro, too. Unruffled, al-Bashir replied, I'm sure they do. With a rueful chuckle, Dan said, As long as I've got that power sat up there, I'll never be lonely. Until you go bankrupt, al-Bashir countered pleasantly. There is that, Dan admitted. Scanwell entered the room with Jane at his side. Dan felt his face settle into a frown. With an effort, he forced the smile. She's always with him, he thought. Like they're living together. No, he tried to tell himself. It's just that you only see her when she's meeting with him. Yeah, he retorted silently. And she's meeting with him all the time. Everyone turned to greet the governor. He wore a lightweight tan suede jacket over darker brown slacks, a bolo string tie hanging from his open shirt collar. Jane was in a mid-thigh cocktail dress, tropical flowers on a pale blue background. She looks gorgeous, Dan thought, smiling and happy and gorgeous. She caught his eye momentarily but quickly looked away and began chatting with the couple nearest to her and Scanwell. The governor started working the room, smiling and shaking hands, going from one guest to the next, Jane constantly at his side. When he came up to Dan and took his hand in his strong grip, he said softly, I'm glad you came, Dan. I hope you can stay after this shindig winds up. Jane and I need to talk with you. Dan nodded. Fine, can do. But he was thinking, Jane and him, Jane and him. Good. Scanwell turned his smile to al-Bashir. After expertly working his way through the guests, Scanwell placed himself in front of the empty dark fireplace and held up both his hands to silence the buzz of conversations. Once everybody had turned their full attention to him, he smiled broadly. You probably already know, he began, that I've got a news conference set for Monday afternoon. It's no secret that I'm going to announce my candidacy for President of the United States. Everyone broke into applause. Scanwell looked properly humble, stared at his boots for a moment,